Find his work on the cover of the Register Guard sports section. Catch up online, registerguard.com. Follow on Twitter. The handle's at AustinMeekRG. Austin, how are you today?
Hey there, Steve. I'm doing good. How are you?
All right. Oregon volleyball. Let's start there because we hit on it last week, and it just seemed the dismissal of Jim Moore kind of happened and then disappeared. A new coach had a press conference, didn't say much, and then kind of an update, two-on-two. Two former players levied allegations against the former coach and his wife, Stacy Metro, an assistant. So because they're allegations and we don't know certain facts, what do we know to date?
Well, I guess you could say that we know for the first time somebody has come forward to say that they did have an issue with Jim Moore's coaching style. You know, when Jim Moore was let go, that was the statement that his coaching style was, I believe they phrased it as mismatched with the standards of the University of Oregon, which is pretty vague. But you could read into that that at some point somebody must have taken issue with Jim, but you didn't know who or why or how many people. And so I guess for the first time there are a couple former players who have come forward to say that they did have an issue with Jim. They alleged a number of different things, which, you know, it's probably in the eye of the beholder, I guess, as to whether you consider that just sort of standard tough coaching or if you consider that verbal abuse. The players felt like that line had been crossed and some of the things that were said to them were abusive. It came down to, you know, some language, I guess, that you could describe as being degrading. Some statements that probably were not totally appropriate. I guess it's kind of, people will read into that what they will, but at least now there is on the record some former players saying that they did have an issue with Jim.
And the saga continues. Let's get to Oregon football. Spring practice done. And, of course, they came off the worst season in a quarter century, had a house cleaning. We heard about a desire to change the culture. Willie Taggart removed that single-digit uniform number that a lot of guys desire. You know, the mentality of start from scratch, all must be earned. But we've got eyes, and I mentioned it when we had Coach Taggart on last week, and he kind of called me on it. How do you view this Willie Taggart MO in hinting someone else other than Justin Herbert could actually be the starting quarterback in September?
Well, I think it's a bluff. I think it's clearly a bluff. I think anybody who watched the spring game on Saturday would say, you know, hey, that's great, you know, to motivate the guys by saying that the competition is still open, but there's a wide disparity between Justin Herbert and any other quarterback Oregon could put on the field, and you know it's the gap is big enough that, you know, Willie Taggart would be undermining the interests of the team to start anybody other than Justin Herbert, I think. They say that in practices this spring, now, Justin Herbert maybe hasn't been as sharp as he was in the spring game. Maybe the other guys have played better. So I guess I understand in theory why the competition is still open and why Willie Taggart hasn't named a starter. But I think it's a little bit risky because, you know, Justin Herbert obviously is still maturing. I think it's totally within the rights of the new coach to expect more. You know, to expect him to take a step in terms of his leadership going from his freshman year to his sophomore year, I think that's totally fair. But I think you got to be a little bit careful that you're not asking the guy to do something that he's, you know, not able to do. You know, asking him to change his personality or be a different person, you don't want to ask him to do that. He's already showed that he's a very talented quarterback with a really bright future. And I think as he grows into more of a leadership role on the team, some of those things will come. But Oregon needs Justin Herbert. You know, if they're going to have a good season next year, Justin Herbert's got to be a big part of it, which is why it's hard for me to believe that anybody else could start at quarterback.
Yeah, along those lines, Coach Taggart said, you know, with he and his staff kind of going to be away off to recruit, he's putting it on a lot of the current players to keep an eye on themselves, potential recruits, I guess maybe be stewards of the program. Any logic that he just wants to give his quarterback more time to see how capable he is of maybe growing into that leadership role?
Well, I think that could be part of it, and I think part of it's just the motivational aspect of Willie Taggart doesn't want anybody really to feel like they've accomplished anything at this point. You know, nobody's really won a job yet. Everything is still up for grabs in Willie's world because he doesn't want anybody to feel satisfied. You know, this is a culture change that he's trying to implement here. And you know, he wants to use every tactic at his disposal to get guys to buy into that, which makes sense. You know, I certainly don't hold that against him, but it's definitely going to be a big change for guys going from the Mark Helfrich personality to Willie Taggart's personality, and I think in some ways it's just an acknowledgement that this is going to take some time. You know, this changeover of the team culture is not going to happen in one spring, or even maybe in one off season or one season. It's going to take some time before this really sinks in.
Talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. Quick thought on the NFL draft. I quoted your tweet from last Thursday, and each year we do our Mock the Mock Draft segment. It's kind of the ultimate made-for-TV sports event. It's such a crapshoot. You know, one trade of or one reach, and every one of those mocks are pretty much burned to the ground. So your theory, watching the draft cold, avoiding the 8,000 mock drafts, how much better did that make what you actually watched of the draft?
Well, the draft is so overanalyzed. I mean, it's got to be the most overanalyzed event in sports, doesn't it? I mean, I can't think of any other event that involves less actual action and so much just exhaustive analysis and buildup. So in years past, especially when I've had to cover the draft, I've just been so sick of it by the time it actually happens. And this year was different. Yeah, I think I mentioned this last week. You know, no Oregon players got drafted, so I really had no obligation to pay attention to it at all. and so I didn't. And then when it actually happened, it was like, oh, yeah, I'm actually kind of curious about what's going to happen now. I have no idea who's supposed to get drafted here. I haven't heard Todd McShay and Mel Kiper break down what this team needs or that team needs. I was watching it with fresh eyes, and it was actually somewhat entertaining, partly because my Chiefs traded up and drafted a quarterback in the first round for the first time since. Do you know the last one?
The last time they moved up to draft a quarterback?
Just the last time the Chiefs drafted a quarterback in the first round before this year.
Wow, would it be Blackledge?
Yes. Oh, that's amazing that you knew that.
The 83 draft.
The
83 draft.
Drafted in the first round.
Well, it kind of popped because it was kind of a famous draft. Plus, I'm insane to know this crap. All right. Let's get to what you wrote about something I discussed with George Schroeder, Black Wednesday at ESPN. I read some takes about political stances of some of the personalities, and people like to push their agenda. But what you wrote, I thought, was spot on. Explain, while some might change the dial webpage or, you know, what they're watching on TV based on what is said, more evidence exists as to, you know, why some of the best in our business are unemployed.
Yeah, I heard your conversation with George about this last week, and I thought you guys had it spot on. You know, it's a trend right now in the media industry that's got to be alarming for a lot of people at ESPN, because that network has invested so much in televising live sports. I think the figure was $8 billion that ESPN is going to pay this year between its contracts with the NFL, MLB, NBA, college football. So just a huge sum of money that ESPN pays. And the problem is people are dropping cable at a pretty alarming rate. They're getting their content online now. They're streaming from Netflix and Hulu. And, you know, with the old cable package, even if you didn't watch ESPN, you paid for ESPN. And ESPN was actually the most expensive channel in the lineup. So they were making a lot of money off a lot of people who didn't really watch sports. And now with internet streaming, people don't have to pay for something that they don't watch. They can pick and choose what they get. And so that's been hard for ESPN's business model. And, you know, it's certainly not the demise of ESPN. As long as people are still watching sports, ESPN's going to be in business. But they're not making the huge profits that they were in the past. And, you know, it's led to ESPN being kind of in the same boat with a lot of us, you know, no longer invincible to what's happening in sports media.
A couple final thoughts for Austin Mika, the Register Guard. What kind of disturbed me is when word came down that the quality of work was not the overriding factor in who got let go. I guess you would naturally connect this to what the newspaper business experienced. Man, now it probably seems like 7 or 8 years ago, and just that shift in how people get their information. The bottom line is, I think you mentioned some of the numbers, the cable industry, some of those stats of who's kind of leaving, knock me over with a feather.
Yeah, it is kind of similar to what has happened with the newspaper industry. Now, ESPN's a little smarter than the newspaper executives were back in the day when they decided, this internet thing, it's not going to be that big a deal anyway. Let's just give our stuff for free on the internet. The newspaper industry has since discovered that was a very bad business model just to give it away for free. So that's not going to happen with ESPN. But the thing with the internet is, it's hard to get people to pay for stuff on the internet. You know, people are very judicious in how they spend money for content online, and you know, they will pay a little for something that they really want, but they're not going to pay for stuff they don't use, and they're not going to overpay. So that's why it's hard for ESPN now. Even if millions of people signed up for some type of standalone streaming service from ESPN, it probably wouldn't replace what they've lost from cable. And so it does, just to kind of bring it full circle, you know, it's not just ESPN that has to worry about this. It's also the schools, you know, who have made millions off of TV contracts and have benefited as much as anybody from, you know, the era of ESPN. You got to wonder if the next time those contracts come up for bid, if ESPN's going to have enough money to pay like they have paid in the past for media rights.
Yeah, and probably not so much. Let's wrap with this. I heard a lot of people say, why would perceived top-notch people like, say, Ed Werder lose their gig, while those seen as the screamers and the attention seekers, be it on First Take or Around the Horn, still around? How important is it that folks understand some key differences between what beat writers and columnists do, that, like it or not, opinion draws more eyes and clicks than hardcore information, just thus more revenue, like it or not?
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, the unfortunate reality that, you know, you put something on the internet, and sometimes it's, you know, the hot take opinion is going to get double the clicks of a really well-constructed, well-reported piece of investigative journalism. I don't really have a great answer for that. It's personal preference. It's, you know, whatever triggers that switch in the brain that makes you click on something, and I'm guilty of it too. I mean, I'm sure if I pulled up my, you know, history of things I click on, not everything I click on is really a, you know, high level piece of fine journalism. But it's kind of the era we live in, and it's too bad, because I knew so many of those people at ESPN that got let go, and, you know, knew the quality of their work, and they did really good work, and, you know, not for a lot of money either. The people who got let go, a lot of them, their salaries were probably a drop in the bucket compared to the amount of money the ESPN spends in a year. But it's just sort of the economics of the internet and what draws traffic and what doesn't. It's kind of discouraging sometimes, but it's just how things work now.
Yeah, and now we have emphatic data to back us up. He is Austin Meek of the Register Guard, online registerguard.com. Check him out and follow along on Twitter at Austin Meek RG. Great stuff as always, Austin. Appreciate the time. Enjoy your week.
All right, you too, Steve.
Take it easy.